The picture contained in this video cassette is protected under the copyright laws of the United States and other countries. This cassette is sold for home use only, and all other rights are expressly reserved by the copyright owner of such motion picture. Any copying or public performance of such motion picture is strictly prohibited and may subject the offender to civil liability and severe criminal penalties. Now a title appears over a blue planet Earth in a star-filled sky. MCA Universal Home Video. A light flashes on the horizon of a spinning globe. In gold letters, the word Universal appears behind the Earth and curls toward us. Beneath it, another title reads, an MCA company. Nighttime. Lightning flashes over the deserted parking lot of a grungy warehouse. Painted on a brick wall, a sign reads, Dandy Pup Pet Supply. Inside, dozens of dogs huddle in wire cages. Two men shuffle inside, lugging a Labrador in a cramped wire cage. Above them, a grim-faced man with thick eyeglasses appears in a window.
I need puppies.
Okay. Puppies. All right, come on.
The workers rush out. A foxhound flinches at the lightning. A shaggy dog lies sulking, electrodes attached to its head. A silky-eared cocker spaniel fidgets nervously in its tiny cage. Now, morning sunlight washes over a small town nestled in a distant, hill-ringed valley. Titles appear. Universal Pictures presents an Ivan Reitman production. A white-coated barber sweeps out his shop, while a burly department store owner displays toy wagons on the sidewalk. A pet store sign reads, Dr. Pet Center. Inside, from a puppy's point of view, we look up at a young couple wearing silly grins. They wiggle their fingers at us. A fluffy St. Bernard puppy, his plump body covered with soft brown and white fur, gazes up at the small crowd of admirers gathered around his pen. More titles appear. Charles Grodin as George Newton in Beethoven. Now, two boys on skateboards stop outside the store window.
He's cool. I think he likes us.
Yeah.
More titles, with Bonnie Hunt, Dean Jones, Oliver Platt, Stanley Tucci, Nicole Tom, Christopher Castile, Sarah Rose Carr, David Duchovny, Patricia Heaton, and Laurel Cronin. Now, his head cocked to one side, the St. Bernard puppy stares at a young couple nuzzling a dachshund. A blonde boy picks up a tiny terrier who eagerly licks his nose. The St. Bernard presses his black nose against the wall of his pen and licks it. A little girl taps on the store window. Tail wagging, the puppy jumps playfully at the glass.
Hi, puppy.
No, absolutely not.
The puppy follows her with his eyes. Now, a red-haired woman in a black leather jacket and miniskirt pulls up on a motorcycle. More titles. Music by Randy Adelman. Costumes designed by Gloria Gresham.
How big's he gonna be?
To be about 150 pounds.
I got a junkyard. I need a big museum.
Casting by Stephen Jacobs. Associate producer, Sheldon Kahn. The clerk hands the puppy to the red-haired biker.
He looks good and mean. You can make any dog mean.
He pees on her leather jacket.
Damn little beast!
The grinning clerk takes the puppy back.
You got any pit bulls?
Edited by Sheldon Kahn and William D. Gordine. Production designer Alex Tavularis. Nighttime. In his pen, the puppy turns hopeful eyes to a passerby, who ignores him. He drops his head sadly onto his front paws. Outside, an unmarked truck rolls to a stop.
It's a pushover place. What about the cops? What about video surveillance? What about the alarm?
Director of photography, Victor J. Kemper. Co-producer, Gordon Webb. A wiry, balding thief, one of the warehouse men, blows cigarette smoke across the doorway. A red laser beam appears. Elbows locked, the two thieves step over the alarm beam. Executive producer Ivan Reitman. The thieves avoid the doorway as they scoop puppies into baskets.
Oh, I'll get some of these little ones too. Come here, you little puppies. Here we go.
The dark-haired pudgy thief loads a golden retriever puppy and several terriers into a basket, then steps across the doorway. He freezes. His companion shoots a frantic look around the store.
I've stepped in the beam.
Harvey, the pudgy thief, shoots a guilty look at Vernon, whose eyes bulge in panic. He grabs the St. Bernard puppy and dashes outside. Together, they load the baskets into the back of the truck, which is filled with dozens of dogs in cages. Harvey climbs in back with the dogs, while Vernon hurries to the driver's seat. Flashing lights from police cars appear in the distance as the truck pulls around the corner and drives away. Titles. Produced by Joe Medjuk and Michael C. Gross. Written by Edmond Dantes and Amy Holden Jones. Directed by Brian Levant. Now, Harvey shuts the St. Bernard into a cage. A short-legged Jack Russell Terrier gazes down at the St. Bernard, whose ears perk up. The terrier paws at his cage door while the St. Bernard watches anxiously. Harvey crawls into the front of the truck.
Hey, didn't I tell you? Doesn't it be taken straight off the street?
You are such a genius.
Get off it! He gives Vernon a bear hug. As the truck bounces over a curb, the terrier's cage jolts open. He leaps to the floor.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just a little bit excited. That's my very first felony. Committed a lot of misdemeanors, but I do believe that was my very first felony.
The terrier finds the St. Bernard's cage and fiddles with the door latch. The other dogs jump with excitement as it swings open. The thieves exchange a worried glance.
Why are they barking?
They're dogs.
They know they're dogs. Go in the back and check.
Harvey squeezes through the folding door and spots the empty cages.
Hey, doggy, put the racket back. Hey. Okay, doggy, back in your house.
Harvey struggles with a cage blocking his path as the terrier paws at the truck's rear door. It swings open.
No, doggy, don't jump!
The terrier hesitates as the road rushes beneath him.
Bad dog, puppy! Good puppy! Good bad puppy! Don't jump!
The St. Bernard wanders toward the open door, then jumps.
Stop the man! What's the matter? Hurry to get in the way!
The terrier dashes down the street.
Hey, you! Come back here!
Paws flying, the tiny Jack Russell flees from Vernon down the rainy street, while the St. Bernard hides in a tipped-over garbage can.
Come here, you!
The terrier gets away. Vernon stalks back to the truck in his black and white cow-spotted boots. The St. Bernard pokes his head out of the garbage can. The terrier, with one brown ear flopping forward and the other poking straight up, stops and looks back. He hesitates, then keeps running. The St. Bernard watches with wide, mournful eyes. Morning. A garbage truck rolls toward us on the empty, peaceful street, while the St. Bernard puppy lies sound asleep, his head on his paws. He jerks awake as the truck stops next to him. The garbage man jumps out and picks up the can next to his. Tail wagging, he scampers out of the metal can and disappears into a thick hedge. Now, he trots down a sidewalk. A cat lies around the corner of a white picket fence. Tail held high, the puppy rounds the corner. He jumps back from the cat and scoots away. Now, from his point of view, we walk toward a gardener clearing leaves with a long hose-like blower. The man turns and accidentally blasts the puppy, who gives himself a brisk shake, then ambles on. Now, a 40-ish man with brown hair walks out of a large, neat house set on a manicured lawn. The puppy watches from behind a leafy hedge as the man frowns and gestures to a paperboy who rides past on his bicycle. The boy tosses a newspaper onto the front walkway. It separates and flutters to the grass in sections. Scowling, the man stoops to gather up the loose pages. As the man turns his back, the puppy jumps out of his hiding place and runs toward him, then follows at his heels into the house. The man turns at the front door, looks behind him with a curious frown, then shakes his head. Unseen, the puppy sneaks past him into a tidy foyer and hops up a staircase with raspberry-colored carpet. Absorbed in his newspaper, the man closes the door. The puppy trips on a step, almost as tall as himself, then wanders into a bedroom where a sleepy blonde woman sits up in bed. Her feet grope for the floor and land on a 10-year-old boy in a sleeping bag.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He puts on thick glasses.
Mom, you heard your father. I know. Rules.
The puppy trots out the door and heads for a bedroom across the hall. He pads toward the side of the bed, where a pink and white quilt suddenly falls on top of him.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
A blonde teenager leaps out of the bed.
Mom!
Yeah, I know.
The puppy struggles to poke his head out from beneath the quilt, then wiggles free.
The bathroom's mine!
Ted gets in first. Tail wagging, the puppy trots back into the hall, then into another bedroom, where a little girl lies asleep, her blonde curls strewn across the pillow. He climbs a ladder of toy boxes, hops onto the bed, and licks her face all over.
Puppy! Hi!
The others burst into the room and freeze. Downstairs, the father reads the paper at the kitchen table. His wife dances in.
Honey, I take back almost everything I ever said about you being cold and insensitive.
Dad, I take back anything I ever said about you too.
Dad, I have everything I ever wanted. I owe you big time.
Why?
Daddy, can we call him Fred?
His eyes bulge. His mouth drops open at the sight of the dog. Later, the three kids carry the puppy outside while their father shakes his head at the window.
We can't have a dog.
Honey, you can't show a child a puppy and then take it away too much.
A puppy? It's obviously lost. You occupy the kids, I'll run it down to the pound.
No way. The owner doesn't claim it, it'll be destroyed. I'm not gonna let
If we keep it, the house will be destroyed.
Honey, it's just a dog. Millions of people have dogs.
Oh, no, not people like me. Dogs sniff, they lick, they chew, they drool, they scratch. Alice, they have parasites.
Oh, God, yeah.
The kids will lose interest. I'll have to take care of it. It'll grow to be enormous, and it'll take over. The lawn will look terrible, and when the dog finally settles down, then everybody will be so upset. We'll have to go get another puppy. The whole thing will start all over again. You understand? We could use a little support
okay,
here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Oh,
she gives him a hug. In the yard, the kids romp with the puppy.
Yes.
Go tell the kids.
He shoots her a pleading look. Outside, the puppy's tail wags furiously as he plays. Alice pushes a reluctant George onto the back porch. He gestures helplessly at his kids, who smother the happy puppy with hugs and kisses.
Hi, kids.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
Daddy, can he sleep in my room?
No, he's sleeping in my
room. Dream on.
Well, I'm the oldest. He's sleeping in my room.
He's not sleeping in anyone's room. I'll just listen to me a minute. We are people. We are goldfish people. We're ant farm people. We're not dog people.
Dad, why can't you just give us a chance?
Yeah.
You're always saying that we have to have responsibility.
I know. That's true.
He looks at Alice, who stands with her arms folded and eyebrows raised.
All right, it's my decision. I mean, I've decided.
Do it.
The 13-year-old Rice shoots her father a resentful glare. Ted leans his head against the puppy's. Little Emily looks up at her dad with a tearful pout. Alice grins.
You better think of something to name him, because when I come home and he destroys my house, I want to know what to call him.
The family swarms around him.
This is just temporary. This is just temporary until we find the owner.
Later.
Okay. The dog's name will be...
She picks a name out of a hat.
Okay. Emily, did you... Well, I don't think words for the body make really very good names.
But he's got one of those. I'm
sure he does, but I don't think that's to stand on the front porch at night yelling that out.
But that's what you call Uncle Richard.
Okay, the dog's name will be...
Alice draws another scrap of paper. She reads it and shoots a look at George, whose lips curl with a slight grin.
Put
The puppy squirms.
What?
Nothing. Let's just call the dog Rover.
Mom, please. Come on, MC
Ultimate
Hammer.
Warrior.
MC
Hammer.
He doesn't like any of those names.
Oh, right. Like, you can really read.
You know, this is ridiculous.
It's a dog. He doesn't have preferences. You could call him Ding Dong Head. He wouldn't know the difference.
Yes, he would.
Everyone stares in disbelief. A score of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony flashes past.
Beethoven.
Daytime. George staples a flyer onto a tree trunk. It reads, "Found St. Bernard Puppy." Our view trails over his shoulder to a dozen trees, each bearing the same flyer. Now, a series of scenes. The kids teach Beethoven to roll over. As George spreads newspapers on the porch, he spots Beethoven peeing in his open briefcase.
Roll over, Beethoven. I gotta hear it again today.
The children cuddle with Beethoven in front of a cozy fireplace, feeding him popcorn. George sits on the living room floor, furiously scrubbing a brown stain on the carpet. Now he carries Beethoven to a far corner of the yard and places him in a doghouse behind a tall chain-link fence. Beethoven chews on the wire door. Now, a slightly older, larger Beethoven stands on the kitchen table, drinking out of the goldfish bowl. George hauls him off, knocking plates to the floor. Beethoven scratches a door, leaving deep gouge marks in the wood. Outside, Ted demonstrates how to roll over. Inside, George drags the dog off an armchair and vacuums up clumps of fur. Alice staggers under the weight of a huge bag of dog food. At Halloween, Emily dresses as a cowgirl. Beethoven wears a saddle. At Thanksgiving, the family joins hands in prayer. Beethoven reaches up and starts nibbling on the turkey. Now, George empties a 20-pound bag of dog food. On a family bike ride, he pulls Beethoven in a cart. On his knees, George pulls a single chewed-up shoe out from under his bed. Grimacing in disgust, he turns it over and pours out a stream of dog drool. Now, the family marches into the kitchen with bigger and bigger bags of Yukonuba dog food. George comes in last. His bag is almost as large as he is. As George walks a full-grown Beethoven in the pouring rain, the last of his flyers blows off a tree. In the yard, Beethoven finally rolls over on his own. Now he pads into the kitchen with mud-soaked paws. George follows with a stunned frown and dirty paw prints all over his gray suit. Another day, George opens the front door and freezes. His mouth drops open in horror as he follows a trail of paw prints through the living room, past a fallen plant, and up the carpeted stairs. He puts his hand on the banister, grimaces, and pulls it away, sticky with dog drool. He pounds up the stairs into his bedroom. Dripping with filth, Beethoven lies on the mud-soaked quilt. In slow motion, the huge dog stands up to shake himself. George holds up his arms and winces as Beethoven showers him with mud, water, and drool. A glob of saliva splatters a family picture and oozes down the glass. Morning. A mailwoman puts letters through the Newton's mail slot, grins, and waves at Beethoven. He takes them in his mouth and lumbers to the kitchen, tail wagging.
If this business is going to... I said, no. I mean, if this thing is going to take off, you know, I need some capital, not a Band-Aid.
Beethoven follows Alice around the kitchen, hungrily eyeing the plate of bacon in her hand. His head comes up to her waist. Rice slips a piece of bacon off her plate and waves it under the table. Beethoven gobbles it down.
But I'm optimistic.
Ted, get down here.
Where's my shoes?
I don't know, honey. Just backtrack.
But I'm optimistic because, you know, I caught that look on their faces when they were going over the book.
Daddy,
so, you know, what?
He wants you to scratch his head.
I don't want to scratch his head. You know, back off.
But he wants you to.
Well, honey, sometimes we don't get what we want. That's not the way the world works. If I don't get this deal, I'll kill myself.
Honey, come on. Don't talk this.
You know, if I could just get them to submit.
Great idea.
What?
Can I have karate lessons?
You know, I didn't get any bacon. What do you want karate lessons for?
Trying to find Bert's even little green belt.
Why don't we just skip the lessons and get you the belt?
Alice places bacon on George's plate. Beethoven's soft brown eyes shoot open. He gobbles down a slice.
Oh, you know, come on,
George grabs him and gets a handful of drool. Emily cracks up as George hurries out.
I've got dog drool on my pants. I can't meet with the Vanguard Capital with dog drool on my pants.
Honey, why don't you just change your pants?
I'm going to change my pants, Alice, but I had a schedule, and now it's gone. I'll never have that schedule again.
Just change your pants.
But if I change my pants, I got to change my jacket. If I change my jacket, I got to change my shirt. If I change my shirt, I got to change my tie. I have to change my belt. I've got to change my shoes. I've got to change my socks.
Just change your pants, George.
She catches the pants. Later, with a red knapsack slung over her shoulder, Rice dashes out of the house and down the street. Ted cautiously pokes his head out from behind a tree as he eyes three boys standing on the sidewalk. As a yellow school bus pulls up, he waits for them to board, then runs on at the last minute. Now, George drags Beethoven into his backyard pen.
I need you to drool off, for God's sakes. Come on, you're so smart. What am I telling you about? Listen to me.
George turns. Beethoven immediately wriggles under the fence through a dugout tunnel. In the front yard, Alice waters her garden with a hose. As George backs his car out behind her, she turns and sprays him through the open window.
Bye, honey.
Glaring, George backs out of the driveway. Now, his long tail wagging, Beethoven ambles down a sunny tree-lined sidewalk and heads toward town. At a busy intersection, he waits for a green light, then crosses the street. He stops at a sidewalk cafe, takes a half-eaten sandwich off a plate, and munches it down. At a fire station, several firemen gather around the 150-pound dog as he laps water from a hose. A Dalmatian looks on. Later, his pink tongue flapping, he stops outside a bakery. Standing on his hind legs, he gazes in longingly. A woman behind the counter smiles and waves. She reaches into a pastry display case and holds up a large cruller. Beethoven licks his chops. Later, in an alley, a restaurant worker empties food scraps into a dumpster. The Jack Russell Terrier from the pet store leaps onto a crate and starts to nibble. Beethoven appears with a cruller. He drops the pastry onto a crate. Tail wagging furiously, the little brown and white terrier hops down and eats the cruller while Beethoven stands by. Later, in a grassy park, Beethoven sits at the feet of a little girl with an ice cream cone. She licks the cone, then offers it to Beethoven, who almost swallows the cone whole and licks his chops. The girl takes another bite, then hands it over to the dog, his muzzle covered with ice cream. Now, at the Valley Vista School, Rice sits in a gym with an open book in her lap. She grins shyly at a group of teenage boys playing basketball. Her eyes are glued on a wiry, dark-haired player. Her smile widens, and she starts to fidget nervously as he and his teammates approach the bleachers to retrieve their t-shirts.
Hi, Mark.
He walks right past her. Rice's eager smile fades as Mark starts talking with an attractive blonde girl. Rice watches with a hurt frown. Now, outside a factory, a sign reads, Newton Air Fresheners.
Air. Fascinating.
See, all of these use a two-dip process that guarantees a longer smell life. Here, smell this. Smell nice?
A sharply dressed couple.
See, we feel if we get the right amount of capital, we can take this place right to the top. I don't mean just successful. I mean dominant.
They give bored nods.
Here's a favorite. Look at this.
A freshener in the shape of a leather jacket.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't that cute?
I could use that in my Beamer.
Well,
we feel a lot of people could use them in the Beamers.
Except I wouldn't want to hang it in a view mirror. Ugh, tacky.
Oh, no. There's Velcro on the back. You know, people hide them. A lot of people just put it under their Newton.
Kudos.
Thank you.
George nods modestly. Now, at a school, dozens of children sit outside eating lunch. Ted sits with two other boys who hurry away as the three bullies from the school bus approach. Ted stands up, but they push him back into his seat.
Hey, boy. Oh, that's a nice lunch you got there.
A veritable nutrition lesson.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget to wash it down with a big glass of milk.
He pours a carton of milk onto Ted's sandwich.
See you on the bus.
One punches his arm roughly, another messes up his hair. Behind his thick glasses, Ted watches them leave and pats his hair back in place. Now, Beethoven gallops toward Rice's school and worriedly scans a group of milling teenagers. Rice runs toward him, smiling.
Hi. Sipkins made me stay after.
She sits on a wall next to him and pulls her lunch from her knapsack.
Hold on a minute.
Sniffing hungrily, Beethoven watches her pull a Twinkie out of a sandwich bag, then gobbles it whole and licks his floppy jowls. Her smile fades when she spots Mark and a friend in the distance talking to the blonde girl.
That's Donna Ditzworth. Even Mark thinks she's perfect.
Beethoven looks on with sad, droopy eyes, then starts toward Mark when Donna walks away.
Beethoven!
He stops to pick up a stick and a patch of grass. From his point of view, we trot toward the boys and stop at their feet. Mark looks down.
Hey, check out Vito.
Rice's mouth drops open.
What a cool-looking dog. I bet you want to play fetch.
Beethoven backs away, wagging the stick.
Come on, you gotta give me the stick if you want me to throw it. Hey, where are you going?
Mark grabs the stick. Beethoven pulls him toward Rice. She stands awkwardly and meets them with a bashful smile.
Cool dog. Cool dog. Is it yours?
She nods.
What's his name?
Beethoven.
Wow. Hi, Beethoven. Hey, Beethoven.
Mark shoots her a grin and walks away. Rice rolls her eyes ecstatically.
He knows my name.
She hugs Beethoven. At the factory.
West Restive here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, you're interested?
Absolutely. We've smelled a lot of stuff, Giorgio, but I think for myself, as well as the Breemeister, when I say, yours smells the best.
That's great. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
George, we're going to crunch some numbers and have it later this week.
That would be great. Thank
okay.
you.
Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward. I'll get it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ciao, Giorgio.
Ciao.
Ciao, George.
Ciao, Bello.
Ciao, Bello.
Ciao. Ciao.
Brad and Bree stick their hands through the sunroof of their red sports car and wave. George stands in front of a 6-foot nose sculpture attached to his building. He waggles his behind in a celebrating dance and leaps into the air. At home, Beethoven slips into the basement through a swinging, hinged window, then trots upstairs to the kitchen. Panting, he gently lifts a cookie off a plate, pads into the den, and settles onto the braided rug to eat. Now, Ted's school bus rolls down the street. Inside, the three bullies corner him next to a window. Eyes wide behind his glasses, Ted shrinks back in fear.
Nice backpack, Teddy.
Can I see it?
The bully dumps everything out.
Sorry.
Oh,
why do you guys always pick on me?
Because you're a little four-eyed dork.
He snatches Ted's glasses and plays keep away with the other boys. Ted steals them back.
Where are you going, Teddy?
Yeah, let's go!
Ted slips through them and runs down the aisle. When the bus driver opens the door, Ted hops out and sprints toward his house with the boys in pursuit.
Wait up, Theodore! We want to walk you home!
Ted drops his knapsack and runs faster, but the bullies catch up to him. In the house, Beethoven jerks his massive head up and hurries to the window. He sees Ted and the boys standing on the corner. He pushes through the window screen, leaps to the ground, and gallops toward Ted, who flinches as the bullies steal his glasses and threaten him with punches. Beethoven stands behind Ted, who doesn't see him. Gritting his teeth, Ted holds up his fists. The boys see Beethoven and jump back. Ted steps toward them, fists raised.
Sorry, Ted.
They hand him his glasses and take off down the sidewalk. Ted blinks in astonishment at his fists.
And don't come back!
Beethoven slips away before Ted can see him. Nighttime. Wearing baggy pajama pants, Ted stands in front of the bathroom mirror. He smiles proudly and flexes his skinny arms in a series of He-Man poses, then thumps his chest. Beethoven lies on Rice's bed. She brushes Beethoven's silky coat.
You think he could like me, Beethoven?
He licks her cheek. She wraps her arms around his neck. He frowns at Beethoven.
You, out!
Good night, Beethoven.
Night.
Wearing a faded pink nightshirt, Rice picks up a pillow and holds it close. Outside, George opens Beethoven's pen.
All right, you sleep in here, I sleep.
Beethoven crawls obediently into his house.
Oh, well, that's very nice. That's very nice. That's proud.
Beethoven's head sinks onto his paws. Now, George and Alice lie in bed. Now, Beethoven crawls through his dirt tunnel and escapes into the yard. Tail wagging, he trots across the grass, down the basement stairs, and through the swinging window. He pads into the dark, empty kitchen. Tongue lolling out of his mouth, he nabs a morsel of food from a half-empty plate and munches it down. He wanders into the den, settles onto the couch, and hits the television remote control with one heavy paw.
Last year, we've seen a 500% increase.
Downstairs, Beethoven stares intently at a black-and-white movie. On screen, a man grows thick wolf fur on his legs and feet. Beethoven cocks his head curiously to one side as he watches the wolfman slink through a misty forest. Frowning, George pads downstairs and starts toward the den. Beethoven jumps off the couch and disappears. Wearing blue pajamas, George pauses in front of the television, then picks up the remote control. Upstairs, Alice hugs herself in the cold hallway and checks the thermostat. As she heads toward the kids' rooms, Beethoven trots upstairs. George pauses at the foot of the stairs to straighten a picture tilted a half inch off center. Now, in Emily's room, Alice pulls a flowered comforter over her sleeping daughter and kisses her softly on the cheek. George shuffles wearily into his dark bedroom.
It was on.
Beethoven lies under the covers.
I don't know. I mean, it feels like that.
George gets in.
The thing is,
he lies with his back turned.
All over me.
Beethoven's eyes blink open. Beethoven rolls over, snuggles against George's back, and starts licking his ear.
It's not even Saturday night, crazy.
Alice stands in the doorway.
Has Daddy's little girl been naughty tonight?
What are you talking to?
George's eyes narrow suspiciously. Beethoven sits at his shoulder, waiting. George finally rolls over and faces his dog. His mouth gapes in horror. He chases Beethoven outside.
I don't think you were gonna get away with that!
Beethoven slips back into his pen.
Oh, that's how you do it. Don't want to stop to that. You've ruined my life. You've ruined my furniture. You've ruined my clothes. My family likes you more than they like me. Why? All you do is drool and shed and eat. And you're never getting out of there again. Never. Do we understand each other? Do it.
The lawn sprinklers turn on, drenching George. Shoulders sagging in defeat, he shuffles back into the house. Beethoven watches with wide, worried eyes. Now, in a park, the Jack Russell Terrier carries an empty can in his mouth to a homeless man, sifting through garbage.
Buddy, how you doing? Good work.
The man rewards him with a friendly pat. Now the terrier chases a can being dragged by a string. A net falls on top of him. Later, Vernon and Harvey arrive at the warehouse.
Vernon! Come on, Harvey.
They unload the terrier's cage.
Can I say something?
What?
I really don't like it when you tease the dogs. What are you, some kind of animal lover?
The Jack Russell peers tensely through the wire mesh of his cage. Harvey and Vernon transfer him to a smaller cage, side by side with dozens of nervous dogs. Now, a balding 40-ish man in a suit stands in the warehouse office. He opens a briefcase to reveal a pistol and several bullets.
We've developed a new type of ammo. It explodes on contact. We'd like you to use this revolver to know the extent of the damage at close range.
The grim-faced boss examines a hollow-tip bullet.
I presume you get dogs with big skulls for the St. Bernards.
Large dogs are difficult. Harder to manage.
With an indulgent nod and smile, the client pulls an unmarked envelope out of his pocket and holds it out. The boss hesitates, then takes it and rifles through a thick stack of money.
I'm sure we'll end.
Daytime. In a veterinary clinic, several people and their pets fill a waiting room. A green parrot, a Siamese cat, a brown and white dog with a funnel-shaped plastic collar, and a black and white rabbit. The grim-faced boss hurries into a back office and exchanges his suit jacket for a white doctor's coat. He glances through the window of an examination room and smiles. Inside, Beethoven stands patiently on an examining table.
Mr. Newton?
Yes?
I'm Dr. Varnick. And this must be Beethoven. It's an animal.
Dr. Varnick grabs Beethoven's huge head, checks his eyes, and pries open his mouth.
In for his shots?
That's right.
Well, he'll be a little groggy this evening.
Oh, that'll be nice. I'd be happy to.
He opens the door for a nurse.
Meg.
Dad, they aren't going to hurt Beethoven, are they?
Honey, nothing could hurt Beethoven.
The nurse draws liquid into a long syringe. When Beethoven sees the 2-inch needle, his eyes bulge in alarm. He faints in a heap. The nurse gapes.
Please, sit down.
In Varnick's office.
Mr. Newton, have you noticed anything strange?
Destroyed my life. Wish I was kidding.
It's very funny. St. Bernards have been heavily overbred. There's been quite a bit written about certain behavioral problems with the breed.
What kind of problems?
Well, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've had to put down several of these animals. They have a tendency to turn on people, attack without provocation.
George's mouth drops open in worried disbelief. Later, wearing bathing suits, the kids run through the sprinklers with Beethoven while Alice grills burgers.
George, come on. Beethoven isn't even remotely dangerous to kids. He might take a bite out of you, though.
First snarl. First any kind of weirdness, and he...
What should I watch for, hun? He's wearing my clothes around the house?
George shoots her a dirty look. Another day, Alice, wearing a business suit, walks the kids to a neighbor's house.
Come on, there's no point in any of us going.
Hi there, you little cutie. Don't you worry about a thing. We're gonna get along great, right, kids?
Okay, you guys, I'll be back before dinner, so it's not that long.
Oh, we're gonna do a lot of neat stuff. I was hoping we could sing a little tune together. You guys like music, huh?
What kind of music?
Well, how about Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass?
She wipes her spit off Ted's glasses.
No, I am a nut for the disco beat.
Okay, kids, be good.
The babysitter is a large woman with bright orange hair and heavy makeup. At the Newtons, a distraught Beethoven paces back and forth in his pen. He rushes to the tunnel, now filled with rocks and logs, and paws anxiously at the dirt. In George's office.
So you've had some time to think
And we've made our decision.
George darts a nervous smile from Bree to Brad.
We want to get in bed with Newton Auto Air Freshener.
Excellent, that's great, that's just great. That's
Brad and Bree ignore Alice's outstretched hand.
That's excellent, excellent.
Let us take
Berg.
Restaurants.
Why don't you just come over to our house? We can barbecue.
Come to our house. We'll barbecue.
Cute.
Brad grimaces.
Let's live dangerously.
Well, our food may not be great, but it's not dangerous.
I hope it's better than this espresso.
Alice forces a smile. Now at the babysitter's house. Her orange hair, puffy and curled, Devonia plays an electric organ. She wears chunky plastic jewelry. Ted and Rice wear sulky, bored frowns behind her back.
You wanna give it a go? Gitchy, gitchy, ya, ya, da, da.
Outside, carrying a pink plastic ball, Emily runs around the edge of a swimming pool. At home, Beethoven's ears prick up. He rises to his feet and presses his nose anxiously against the chain-link fence. At Devonia's, Emily chases the bouncing ball.
Soul, sister, go, sister, hey, sister, go, sister, soul, sister, go, sister, met mama lie down in old New Orleans.
Our view zooms out the window. Outside, Emily reaches for the ball, which has fallen into the water. She flails desperately. Beethoven gnaws on the door latch of the pen. He shoves it open and charges across the yard. In the pool, Emily claws for the surface. She struggles to keep her head above water, then sinks. Beethoven gallops down the street, his ears flying in the wind. Emily disappears underwater. Beethoven leaps over a fence into a yard where a young woman lies sunbathing. He vaults over her chair, explodes through a hedge, and hurtles into the pool. Underwater, he pushes Emily's limp body toward the surface with his broad head. She clings to his neck as he paddles her toward the edge of the pool. Inside, Devonia keeps playing. Beethoven deposits Emily on a step, climbs out, then dries himself off with a vigorous head-to-tail shake. Water sprays everywhere. He returns to Emily and covers her face with quick, worried licks.
Thanks, babe, but you better go home now. Mom said...
You kids might be interested to know that I am a featured performer Saturday nights at the Padded Zebra.
Oh my gosh, Emily's in the pool!
The pool?
Beethoven disappears around a corner.
Emily, what are you doing in the pool, young lady? Get out of there this instant! You want to get me into trouble?
Right. I fell in.
Oh, Emily, you must have been so scared.
I thought I was gonna die.
A little secret.
Rice butts in.
I'd like to call my mother.
Your mother?
Immediately.
Later, Alice hustles her children into the car.
She must have snuck out while I was watching Ted and Rice. It was hot out, so I guess she wanted to take a little swim.
And where were you while all this was happening?
I was where I was supposed to be, side, watching the other two. If Emily had stayed where I put her, none of this would have happened.
These children need us, their mother. Fired.
Later, Alice chops vegetables.
Honey, it was
so...
You can't throw out the option of having a babysitter just because we had a bad one. We'll find somebody really responsible to look after the kids.
She glares at him. On the patio, Brad and Bree fidget uncomfortably.
You know, we're fine on our own. You don't have to entertain us.
The three kids fix them in a sullen stare. Beethoven, tethered on the lawn, keeps a watchful eye.
Do you have any kids?
Brad and Bree hold hands.
Big one.
It's us.
The kids march into the house. Beethoven sinks his head forlornly onto the grass.
Rats.
Monster.
We pulled this off. Six mirrors.
Beethoven jerks his head up. George and Alice emerge with a vegetable platter.
Sorry for the delay. We
got... No problem.
Vegetables. Here you go.
Oh, look at that.
Here's the paperwork, Giorgio.
As George skims the contract, Beethoven looks on, his droopy eyes alert and watchful.
Alicia. I'm sorry, Alice.
Can I go, please?
He pouts childishly.
Thank you.
Alice heads for a drink cart. George.
Just right down at the bottom there, George.
Disgust.
Alice pours a glass of lemonade, takes a sip, then spits it back. With a sunny smile, she carries it to Brad.
Now, why don't we have a little something to eat, and then you can read it over.
Alice, tell me.
Dog.
Oh, gee, no.
Well, he's a dog.
Oh, he sure is.
Bernard.
Well, he's a purebred Saint Bernard.
No.
Oh, yes. Oh, look at that big old tongue, you guys. Yes.
Oh, yeah. You want to come with Mommy and Daddy? Yes, you do, don't you? Oh, come on.
Holding his leash, she leads Beethoven to the table.
Oh, I just love these big, dumb animals.
I bet you do.
Dogs obey so much better, don't they?
Come here.
George glances up. Alice smiles tensely. Cutie, Beethoven cutie. Crawls under the patio
oh,
table.
Yes.
Georgia.
Now, I mean, maybe we can...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I've got that. You be careful. Don't you break a nail.
Beethoven wraps his leash around the table and Brad and Bree's chair legs.
Right there, George.
Honey, you sit. I've got this.
Alice carries the broken glass inside, where the kids sit moping.
You guys don't seem to have...
I'm crushed.
Me too. I'll cry all night.
I know. I don't like Dad's business.
I hope Beethoven slimes the grass.
But of course, if you don't want our capital, we could find...
Sure.
No.
Beethoven nudges George's arm as he starts to sign.
Beethoven, come on, down.
And he's about to sign.
Just stay off, really.
Beethoven nuzzles Brad's arm.
Oh, you get it.
Brad hurls his exercise ball. Beethoven takes off.
I pitched in college.
The wrapped leash tightens. The table crashes onto its side. The chairs topple. Lying on their backs, Brad and Bree skid across the lawn as Beethoven chases the ball. As he hurtles over a fence, their chairs do a double flip and crash onto the sidewalk. The table lands in front of them.
Beethoven, stop! Ah! Mad dog!
Beethoven's eyes bulge.
Hey! Oh, no!
He takes off, dragging Brad, Bree, and the table with him. Alice grins with a gleeful wave. Legs dangling helplessly, Brad and Bree zip down the sidewalk on their backs. George runs after them. Nighttime. His nose twitching, Beethoven sits in his pen and gazes fondly at George, who slumps on a patio chair. Alice emerges from the house, pulling a baseball jacket over her black blouse. George stares into space with a heavy sigh. Alice leans gently against his shoulder. Inside, the kids eavesdrop.
I don't want their money.
She sits beside him on the one remaining patio chair.
I'm not interested in... If I had been home instead of helping you... And I'm not re-entering the work. You're gonna have to do this on your own.
George rolls his eyes.
And tucked away behind you, deep kids.
George shakes his head with a smirk. Beethoven watches with droopy eyes.
That's how you see me. Suddenly, I'm a lousy husband and father. Everything was just fine until Beethoven... I've tried to be patient. The dog has to go.
I'm proud of Beethoven. Those two idiots insulted your kids, they treated me like dirt, and he was the only one of us who had the nerve to give them the ride they deserved. I'm going to bed.
My dream's going down the drain, and you're worried about a dog.
She turns and bites her lip.
Your family's going down the drain, and you're...
George looks away from Alice's direct gaze. The kids run from the door as she walks in. George sinks back into the chair. Beethoven's head droops onto the ground. Morning. A clock reads 6:27. The kids sneak downstairs.
Why do we gotta be so quiet?
Ted puts his hand over Emily's mouth and carries her downstairs. Rice hustles them into the kitchen. Now, Ted takes Beethoven for a walk. Beethoven sees something and lunges, jerking Ted off his feet. Later, Emily sits on the floor next to Beethoven's dish, the size of a car tire. She rips open a 50-pound bag of dog food and empties it onto the floor. About a quarter of it goes into the bowl. Later, Beethoven stands patiently while the kids give him a bath. He shakes himself, spraying soap and water everywhere. Now, Emily takes eggs out of the refrigerator. Cradling them in her arm, she drops one onto the kitchen floor. Outside, Rice dries Beethoven's damp fur with a blow dryer. Ted squeezes oranges while Rice scrambles eggs and sets the table. Scowling, George walks into the kitchen and freezes when he sees Beethoven with a red ribbon around his neck. The kids stand in a row, Rice and Emily in frilly dresses and Ted in a jacket and tie. Rice pours him a cup of coffee.
We made you breakfast, Dad.
Scrambled eggs, just the way you like them.
I fed Beethoven.
And we washed him, too.
Beethoven sits up straight.
I'm gonna walk Beethoven every day.
We've divided up the dog chores so that you won't eat him.
Anything else at all?
Fine.
He spears a forkful of scrambled egg and puts it in his mouth.
Dad.
Rice and Ted grin sheepishly at their father, who tries to smile.
Okay, fine.
Later, they play Super Mario Brothers, while Emily plays with the toy St. Bernard.
Okay, fine. Get that question block!
Alice opens the front door.
Ah, Mrs. Newton.
Yes?
I'm Dr. Varnik, the veterinarian. I'm sorry to trouble you. I wonder if I might come in.
She hesitates, then smiles.
Well, sure, yeah, come on in.
With animals as large as yours, I like to do a follow-up on rabies shots.
Oh, well.
Just to see how he's doing.
I'll tell you, it's really nice of you to come all the way down here.
Not at all. No trouble at all.
Here you go.
I'll only be a moment.
Would you like a lemonade or anything?
Oh, no. No. I'll be fine, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, Beethoven. How are you doing, huh?
Beethoven stares curiously at Dr. Varnik. Varnik waits for Alice to go back into the house, then glances quickly around the empty yard. He pulls scissors from his pocket, cuts his shirt sleeve, then rips it.
This is gonna hurt you a lot more than it hurts me. It's been great benefit mankind.
Varnik pulls out a tube of fake blood and smears the red paste on his forearms. Inside, Emily wanders to the window and glances out at the yard. Varnik drips the fake blood onto Beethoven's muzzle, tucks the tube back in his pocket, then faces the dog with a gleeful grin.
All right, now.
He whacks Beethoven in the face. Emily gapes. Beethoven knocks him to the ground. Varnik grabs Beethoven's jowls and pretends to fend him off.
George!
Help! Help somebody! Help! Good boy, good boy!
Beethoven! Beethoven!
George and Alice dash outside, followed closely by the kids. They hurry into the pen and pull Beethoven away from Varnik, who staggers to his feet.
Look what he did!
Are you all right?
Well, I don't know.
What happened?
Oh, I'm so sorry. He just lunged at me.
That's not true. I saw you. You hit Beethoven.
Emily, please.
Why would I hit Beethoven? I patted him on the head. It's possible that from a distance, the little child...
Liar!
Emily!
No, it's all wrong. Oh, I'm sorry. Everything's all right.
Perfectly natural. The child would want to defend her dog.
Let's call an ambulance.
No. I'll take care of it. I'm all right. Oh, my. I'll take this myself.
George follows Varnik to his car.
I'm terribly sorry. I mean, he's never...
So once an animal crosses the line, attack. Of course, next time it could be one of your children.
George opens the car door.
Mr. Newton, we have a real problem. The law is very clear when it comes to... Unless you bring the animal to my office immediately, I'm afraid we'll be forced to press charges.
George gives a faltering nod.
I'm so sorry.
With a feeble shrug, George watches the sleek black Porsche zoom away. Now he trudges upstairs. In Rice's room, the kids all hug Alice.
Beethoven.
Alice sees George and gives him a sad, reproachful frown. George shakes his head, shrugs helplessly, and turns. Outside, Beethoven suns himself in his pen. George walks steadily toward him, leash in hand. Beethoven jumps to his feet and gazes at him expectantly. As he nears the fence, George slows down. In a flash, he remembers Beethoven as a tiny, fluffy puppy. George presses his lips together and looks away. The full-grown Beethoven watches him with sad, drooping eyes. George continues toward him. Now, with Beethoven hanging his head out the rear window, George backs the station wagon out of the driveway. Beethoven scans the street anxiously. Ted opens the front door of the house as the car drives away.
Dad, Beethoven! Wait! Wait!
From the sidewalk, Ted and Rice chase the car. Beethoven sees Rice and pants anxiously. Beethoven fixes his gaze on Rice as the car disappears down the street. Her long blonde hair blowing in the wind, Rice starts to sob. In the car, George glances in the rearview mirror and watches Beethoven settle on the back seat. A slight, wistful smile tugs at his lips. Beethoven's long, soft ears droop. His long pink tongue dangles in a nervous pant. Later, at the veterinary clinic, Varnik wraps bandages around his right arm and secures them with strips of medical tape. Pulling a white lab coat over his shirt and tie, he emerges from his office and strides into the waiting room, where George stands with Beethoven.
I know that you're doing so. Follow me.
George bows his head, hesitates, then reluctantly coaxes Beethoven to follow.
37 stitches. You want the collar and tag?
George shrugs and nods.
Do you mind...
George takes a heavy leather slip collar from Varnik and kneels in front of Beethoven, who lets him tug the family collar off his head. He buries his face in George's arm. George gently lifts the dog's huge head and drapes the new collar around his neck. Beethoven gazes steadily up at him, his soft brown eyes wide and trusting. He gazes into Beethoven's face with its floppy brown ears, white muzzle, and drooping...
Sad state of affairs. Come on, boy. Come on.
Beethoven stops and looks back at George. Varnik drags him toward a cage. From Beethoven's point of view, we see Varnik's smug grin as he locks us in. George leans despondently on the doorway. Now, George shuffles to the reception desk.
George Noden.
Yeah, look, we're gonna have to charge you.
With a preoccupied frown, George nods slightly and turns away. He freezes when he sees the waiting room full of dogs looking at him. A silky golden cocker spaniel sinks its head onto its paws. A white German shepherd crawls to the floor, and a glossy black lab bows its head. Later, his wood-paneled station wagon pulls into the driveway. He walks through the front door and pauses. His family sits in the dining room, staring at him. When they see Beethoven's collar and leash, the children get up and rush out of the room. Alice looks away. A tearful Emily turns in the door.
Dog killer!
At the clinic.
Hey, go on, huh, Doc?
He's perfect for the ammo experiment.
Get everything ready. I'll be by in the morning. We'll do the test on him first then.
All right.
Harvey and Vernon shove the muzzled Beethoven into a tiny cage in the back of their truck. Later at the warehouse.
Come on, good doggy, good doggy.
Still in his cage, the Jack Russell Terrier bolts upright as Harvey and Vernon drag Beethoven inside with a dog catcher's noose around his neck.
Come on! Okay,
Come on, doggy! Beethoven struggles as Harvey drags him into a wire cage. They heave a sigh of relief as Beethoven paws desperately at the door. Beethoven sees the terrier. His tail starts to wag.
Shut up!
Doc will work out him first thing in the morning. Can we eat?
Vernon runs a comb through his thin hair. As they leave, Beethoven pries the muzzle off his face and shakes himself. Nighttime. Alice and George sit on the back steps, staring.
A piece of carpet or a chance to sell more air freshener.
Come on, it had nothing to do with carpet or air freshener. You saw what he did to the vet.
No.
Say that.
Yes, but we don't know why he did it. I mean, or something. George, Emily's really sticking.
No, but why would a vet say something like that? What do you want me to do? Dr. Varnick, are you sure you didn't hit our dog? Oh, yes, Mr. Newton. I just remembered I did hit your dog. Come on.
You come on, George. Please, it would make me feel better. Let's just go.
I'm coming with you.
So am I.
We're all going with you.
George gapes helplessly. In his office, Varnick stuffs piles of money into a safe. He freezes, then closes the safe and cracks open the front door.
I'm terribly sorry.
We want our dog!
Yeah!
Beethoven!
All right, kids, let Danny handle
this. What can I do for you?
We want our dog back!
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. It's too late. The dog's been destroyed.
No! Dad!
Oh, wait a minute. I was told this wouldn't happen until tomorrow.
I don't believe you!
Rice shoves past him. Varnick grabs her.
Hands off her!
They stare at Varnick's healthy right arm.
I told you he was lying!
Wait, you can't come in here! This is private property!
They rush into the back room. All the cages are empty.
He's not here!
All right, hold it!
Nobody's here!
You have no right to be in here! Out, all of you!
Where's my dog? Ordered that dog destroyed, and it was done. Now get out.
George grabs his shirt.
You hit me, I'll have you put in jail for assault and battery.
George's snarl fades. He starts to let go, then swings. Varnick falls into a cage.
Whoa!
Dad!
Honey.
Wow.
Whoa.
That was amazing. Dad, you were really cool.
Really, honey.
At a payphone.
He said our dog bit him on the arm.
But he didn't really bite him.
No bite marks on his arm. What do you mean, so what? You know, I'd like to file a report on you.
What, they're not going to help us?
Dad, look. Duck fart.
Varnick, 50 feet away, leaves the clinic and walks to his Porsche.
Over.
George and Alice sneak.
Shut it.
George turns on his headlights and backs up behind the Porsche.
Turn off your lights.
They follow the red taillights of the Porsche down the dark street. Now, at the warehouse, a pillar of fiery smoke billows from a furnace chimney. Below, Harvey and Vernon dump boxes of files into the fire.
Very good. We gotta start getting the dogs.
The door?
Yeah.
He said we gotta destroy all the evidence.
Harvey hesitates, stares dumbly from Vernon to the box in his arms, then tosses the files into the fire. Now, headlights gleaming through the darkness, Varnik's Porsche zips down a deserted street with broken-down warehouses on both sides. He pulls into the Dandy Pup Pet Supply parking lot, which is littered with garbage. The Newtons pull to a stop on the other side of the street. They watch as Varnik pulls out a key, opens the door, and slips inside.
I'm gonna check this out.
George climbs out of the car. Alice bites her lip nervously. He checks his watch and leaves. Inside, Varnik draws fluid from a bottle into a syringe. Harvey and Vernon hurry in.
And bring me a little one for this guy.
Scowling in concentration, Varnik places the syringe on a tray with a dozen other needles. Outside, George sneaks around the back of the building and climbs up a fire ladder. Inside, the dogs jerk their heads up as Harvey and Vernon enter.
Latch!
Vernon grabs the Jack Russell by the scruff of the neck. The little terrier snarls fiercely. Beethoven claws desperately at his cage door.
You're gonna be a pioneer. Like Davy Crockett, right?
Right.
Beethoven thrashes wildly, slamming his head against the door again and again until the latch breaks. He charges. Vernon drops the terrier. With Beethoven hot on their heels, the two thugs dash around the warehouse and retreat into the lab. They crouch behind metal tables, trying to threaten Beethoven with brushes and supplies. He plows forward and knocks the tables onto them.
Oh no! Oh no! No! No!
Vernon runs for a ladder. Beethoven leaps into the air and sinks his teeth into one black and white boot. Outside, George reaches the top of the ladder and climbs onto the roof, several stories high. He hurries to a glass skylight and looks down into the lab.
I'm saving you! I'm saving you!
Harvey slips the noose around Beethoven's neck and hauls him away. Above them, George watches the thugs wrestle with his dog. Varnik walks into the lab and sneers at Harvey and Vernon, who cower under his cold gaze. His blue lab coat billowing like a cape, Varnik slides down the ladder. George's mouth drops open in horror.
Emily, come on, honey. Here, Rice. Lock the doors. If I'm not back in 15, I'll be back, all right?
Lock the doors, you guys. Lock that one and that one.
Alice runs to a payphone. In the lab, Varnik circles Beethoven, holding the pistol in one...
Nice. We're gonna have a little field test.
He grins and points at Beethoven's head.
So...
George falls in, hitting Harvey and Vernon. Beethoven rushes to his side. George hugs him.
You're a very foolish man, Mr. Newton. Alone.
He aims. The little terrier bites his crotch.
That was a gun!
Daddy!
Mom,
get over here!
There's no time!
In the lab, George wrestles Harvey. Beethoven attacks Vernon, and the Jack Russell clings to Varnik.
Buckle up.
You can't drive! You don't even have a driver's license!
We're going!
Ted presses the accelerator. Alice looks up as the car lurches over a sidewalk and swerves into the parking lot. She sprints after them. Ted speeds toward the door. They crash into the warehouse and hurtle toward the lab. The car bursts in and crashes into a gurney, which rolls into the syringe tray. All the needles fly toward Varnik like darts. The needles stick in his chest. Varnik slides to the ground with a silly grin.
Cool!
Dad!
Oh.
George punches Harvey's chin.
Are you all right? Are you all right?
Beethoven!
Beethoven joins the family in a big hug. Alice climbs over the battered car.
Is everyone alive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where were you?
I was shopping, George. I called the police.
I jumped through the thing. I fell on the guys. I knocked the guy out.
Well, you're shooting
You let Ted drive the car
through
the door.
I didn't let him drive. Don't yell at me.
I'm not yelling. Oh.
Yes, you are. I love you too.
The children grin at their kissing parents. Slumped against the wall, Varnik passes out.
Really?
Now, the Newtons scramble to open the cages for all the dogs who jump free. Crawling on their hands and knees, Vernon and Harvey sneak toward the door. The Jack Russell leaps to the roof of the car and sees them. The thugs flee.
Shut the boys!
Led by the terrier, the dogs take off after Harvey and Vernon, who gape fearfully over their shoulders. Dozens of dogs gallop at their heels, hounds and terriers, retrievers and mutts. The thugs run into the street and dash down a narrow sidewalk where vendors jump out of their way. With the dogs in close pursuit, Vernon shoves a bystander into a cabbage stand. The vegetables tumble to the sidewalk. The dogs barge through the crowd. A golden retriever picks up a cabbage along the way. A man jumps into an onion pile. Harvey and Vernon run toward a shadowy junkyard surrounded by a barbed wire fence.
Come on. Over the fence.
They climb up the chain-link fence and struggle over the barbed wire with the dogs snapping at their feet. Harvey and Vernon fall into the dingy junkyard on the other side. Behind them, four lean Doberman pinschers emerge from the shadows. Harvey turns and waves his behind at the lab dogs. He sees the Dobermans. His face goes numb. He thumps Vernon on the shoulder as the Dobermans line up in a menacing row. Vernon ignores him.
You little mangy. What?
Vernon turns. His mouth drops open. Their backs pressed against the fence, Harvey and Vernon gape at each other, then hold hands. The dogs lunge forward.
The final chapter of a horror county courthouse today.
Now on the Newtons TV.
Animal lovers everywhere cheered today when Dr. Herman Varnek and two associates were indicted on 123 counts of animal abuse. Oh,
scientific investigations.
Harvey and Vernon are covered in bandages.
And leading the cheers were the Ring's unlikely captors, the Newton family of Valley Vista. Yeah!
You know, I had no choice but to do that. You know, Beethoven is not just some dog much.
Have you always been a dog lover?
You know, maybe not as much as now. Thank you.
This is Ruth Walters reporting from County Courthouse.
Yeah! Okay, guys, let's go to bed.
Oh, we have to.
It's been a long day.
George hugs Ted, then Rice.
Good night, Daddy. Good night, Dad. I love you.
He swings Emily into his arms.
Can I stay up?
You are up. Go to sleep. Hello?
Beethoven pushes through his legs.
Rice. Who's calling? Rice. Somebody who saw you on TV.
Her face lights up. George smiles.
Friday?
Later, in bed, George turns out the light.
Good night.
Beethoven and the Jack Russell lie on the foot of the bed.
Please.
Our view pulls back slowly. Dozens of dogs lie in beds all around the room, crammed into every corner. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Described by Leslie Wu Foley. Descriptions read by Rena Baskin. Credits roll. Cast: Charles Grodin as George Newton. Bonnie Hunt as Alice Newton. Dean Jones as Dr. Varnek. Nicole Tom as Rice. Christopher Castile as Ted. Sarah Rose Carr as Emily. Oliver Platt as Harvey. Stanley Tucci as Vernon. David Duchovny as Brad. Patricia Heaton as Bree. Laurel Cronin as Devonia Pete. Olan Jones as the biker woman. Nancy Fish as Miss Grundle. Craig Pinkard as the homeless man. Robbie Davidson as Mark. Sherry Pasinger as the reporter. Patrick LeBrec as bully number one. Jacob Kenner as bully number two. Matthew Brooks as bully number three. Chris Little as the newsreader. Lisa Gerber as Donna. Corey Danziger as Mark's friend. Colleen O'Hara as the young woman. Nicholas Meyers as the young man, Maxine Elliott as the old woman, Stephanie Massman as the young woman, Sarek Lofton as skateboarder number one, Chad Morton as skateboarder number two, Melora Walters as the pet shop owner, Holly Wartell as nurse number two, Lorraine Marga as the mother at the pet store, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as student number one, Andre McKenzie as student number two, and Chris as Beethoven. Stunt coordinator Buddy Joe Hooker. Stunts Hank Hooker, Sean Odom, Danny Epper, Ralph Odom, Janet S. Brady, Bobby Bass, John Meyer, Greg J. Barnett, Chad Robert Randall, and Thomas R. Harper. Unit production manager Gordon Webb. First assistant director Jerem A. Schwartz. Second assistant director Todd Corman. Second assistant director David Spitzer. Camera operator Bill Rowe. First assistant camera William Clevenger and Steve McLean. Second assistant camera Scott Goodrich and Brad Peterman. Underwater photography Pete Romano. Still photographer Bruce McBroom. Production sound mixer Charles Wilborn. Boom operator Kenneth Schwartz. Cableman Jeffrey Atkinson. Video playback Paul Murphy. Re-recording mixers Gary C. Bourgeois, Scott Milan, and Adam Jenkins. Recordist Scott Austin. ADR group LA Mad Dogs. Foley recorded by David W. Allstatter, CAS. Art director Charles Breen. Set decorator Gary Fettis. Set designers Stan Tropp and Gary Diamond. Production illustrator Mentor Hubner. Lead man Greg Lynch. Set dressers Eric Hewlett, Kurt Hewlett, Donald Kading, and Carl Cassara. Drapery foreman John J. Slatsky. Property master Rick Young. Assistant prop masters Stan W. Cockrell and Michael Carrillo. Costume supervisor Margot Baxley. Costumers Leslie Weir and Adrienne Mannon. Makeup artists Ken Chase and Jim Scribner. Hairstylists Susan V. Kalinowski and Alan Payne. Production accountant Ellen Adolph. Assistant production accountant John C. Cruz. Production coordinator Pamela Hoyt Hoffman. Assistant production coordinator Jean M. Longwell. Script supervisor Winifred Rich. Chief lighting technician Earl Gilbert. Rigging gaffer Steve Gilbert. Best Boy Electric, Rio Hasig. Key Grip, Galen Schultz. Best Boy Grip, Audie Aragon. Dolly Grip, Brad Ray. Electricians, Robert Fiore and Frank Dorowski. Company Grips, Mike Apperson, Brian Mills, and Edward Peters. Casting Associate, Alan Berger. Dialogue Coach, Kevin McDermott. Studio Teacher, Gloria Hoffman. Location Manager, Ira Stanley Rosenstein. Assistant Location Manager, Peter Julian Novak. Unit Publicist, Marcy Bolotin. Construction Coordinator, George Stokes. Construction Foreman, James Orendorf. Labor Foreman, Ralph Votaw and Mario D'Alfonso. Paint Foreman, Christopher Woodworth. Standby Painter, Walter Zingelowitz. Special Effects, Clifford P. Wenger, Derek Crane, and John Downey. Transportation Coordinator, Craig Pinkard. Transportation Captain, Richard Johnson. Assistant to Mr. Reitman, Yvonne Owens. Assistant to Mr. Medjuk, Janice Nehu. Assistant to Mr. Gross, Marcus Miller. Assistant to Mr. Levant, Connie Case Barton. Assistant to Mr. Groden, Clay Alexander. Production Assistants, Greg Rogers, Carla D. Bowen, Jennifer Kahn, George Tosh, David Gordon, Scott Groneman, Jordan Chinnick, Jason Reitman, and Tony Solomon. Extras Casting, Central Casting. Mechanical effects created by Peter Knowlton. Mechanical effects designed by David Nelson. Mechanical effects coordinator Scott Salick. Puppeteers Andrew Workman, Norman Cabrera, Norman Tempia, Peter Abramson, Mike Regan, and Porter Williams. Craft Service John Paul. Nurse Susan Kunkel. Greensman Paul David Harris. Catering by Mickelson's. Chef Luis Lara. Animal Action Coordinator Carl Lewis Miller. Dog Trainers Glenn D. Garner, Nora Thompson, Robert R. Weatherwax, and Deborah Kellerman. Assistant Dog Trainers Teresa Ann Miller, Alvin Mears, William Grisco, Terry Knapp, Shauna Skidmore, April Morley, Kathy McCallum, and Stacy Packer. Additional Animals Paul Calabria and Karen Du McElhayton. All animal action was monitored by the American Humane Association. No animals were harmed in the making of this film. Scenes depicting abuse were accomplished with the use of animatronic animals. Assistant Film Editors John Curran and Gregory Gonitz. Apprentice Editors Margaret Liu and Stephen Wolfson. Negative Cutter Kona Cutting. Color Timer Reed Burns. Titles and Opticals Pacific Title. Supervising sound editors, Tom McCarthy and Roxanne Jones. Sound effects editors, Don S. Walden, John O. Wild, William Hartman, Mark LaPointe, Harry M. Cheney, MPSE, David Williams, and Victor B. Lackey. Supervising ADR editor, David B. Cohen, MPSE. Assistant sound editors, Steve Bourne and Francis K. Petrovich. Music editing, Tom Carlin for Triad Music. Music contractor, Sandy DeCrescent. Music scoring mixer, Bob Fernandez. Orchestrator, Greg McRitchie. Second unit, directors, Glenn Randall Jr. and Michael C. Gross. First assistant directors, Tracy Rosenthal and Ira Stanley Rosenstein. Second assistant director, Wendolyn Peterson. Director of photography, John M. Stevens. Camera operator, Stephen G. Shank. First assistant camera, Kurt Soderling. Second assistant camera, Scott Spruill. Location manager, Joseph Mandalena. Script supervisor, Marion Cronin. Property set dressing, Michael Bates. Chief lighting technician, Alan Goldenar. Best boy electric, Bob Amarian. Key grip, Rick Tucker. Best boy grip, Scott Mayhew. Dolly grip, Tom Adams. Costumer, Jimmy George. Greensman, John Thompson. Transportation coordinator, Kenneth Lubin. Craft service, Gene Berry. Songs. Roll Over Beethoven, written by Chuck Berry, performed by Paul Schaefer and the World's Most Dangerous Band, produced by Paul Schaefer. Lady Marmalade, written by Kenny Nolan and Bob Crewe, performed by Harry Garfield. Filmed with Panavision cameras and lenses. Color by Deluxe. Universal City Studios Incorporated, copyright 1991. All rights reserved. Country of first publication, United States of America. Universal City Studios Incorporated is the author of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Beethoven, Northern Lights Entertainment. This motion picture has been rated PG, parental guidance suggested by the Classification and Rating Administration.